The Gospel is from the book of Matthew, chapter 17, verses 1 through 9. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James, his brother, John, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah, talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The word of the Lord.
When I first came to this church as a young pastor, part of the fun I got to have was take our young people on their summer trips. And I came here in the spring, so the summer trip had already been set for that summer, so I was expected to go along. And back then we had we were going to go backpacking at a wonderful Lutheran camp in Montana called Christicon. So I was a little nervous about this because I had never gone backpacking in my life, and my family never even went camping, like with a trailer or motorhome or anything like that. But I thought, well, let's give it a try. So we got out to Montana there, we strapped on the backpack, and we went up the hill, up the trail, up into the mountains. And I have to admit, it was one of the most miserable times of my life. It was cold. I woke up in the morning, and I'd left my wet boots outside the tent. There was frost on them. My bootlaces were frozen stiff. It rained on us half of the time. It snowed on us. So the trail walking up there, it was a grunt. It was hard. But it was also one of the best times I've ever had in my life. Because when the sun came out and you were up on those mountain peaks and you could see all of God's creation stretching out before you, it was amazing. It was just beautiful. And I was hooked and I wanted to do it again. So the first thing when I came down is I called up my friend. And my friend had been backpacking for years, and he tried to be encouraging me to go backpacking with him. And I said, "No, this doesn't sound like fun at all." So he was pleasantly surprised when I called him up after that first trip and said, "When are we going backpacking?" So for several years, we went backpacking, and we went to the places that he knew, the hiking places that he knew, mainly in Wyoming. And they were beautiful and wonderful. But my first love was that trip up in Christicon, and I said to him, "We got to go back there because I wanted to see it again and I wanted him to experience it." So about 4 or 5 years later, we decided to go back up there. And we put on our packs and we headed up the trail, up the mountainside. You know how your memory of things past isn't exactly the way things really are? So the trail was a little bit steeper than I thought I had remembered. And the trail was a lot longer than I had remembered. And my poor friend on the way up there started to grumble and ask questions like, "Steve, are we there yet? Are we getting close?" And I was so frustrated because I couldn't exactly remember how far it was up there. And I was just saying, "Well, it's just up there a little ways," but I knew I wasn't telling him the truth. Here's the deal, though. I knew what lay ahead. I had a vision. It was going to be glorious. It was going to be wonderful. And it was going to be so worth all the time and effort up that trail. But my poor buddy did not share that vision. And so all he was grumbling and frustrated and mad at me. In fact, when we got up there, when we were going to set up our tent, he just plopped down in the mountain meadow up there and pouted and literally said to me, "Steve, you had no right to bring me here." He got over it quickly, but he didn't share that vision. I wonder if that helps us understand what Jesus was doing with the transfiguration. Jesus knew he was headed for Jerusalem and what was going to happen in Jerusalem. He was going to be arrested. He was going to be tried in a kangaroo court. He was going to be tortured. He was going to be put to death in the most humiliating and painful way that the Romans could imagine. And think about his poor disciples, those who had dared to trust in him and look to him for the hope of their future. And here they're going to see him crucified and died. They were going to be in a panic. They were going to just be dispersed. They needed something to give them the broader perspective, a vision big enough to see them through that terrible, terrible time in their life. So while Jesus knew he was going to go to that hill outside of Jerusalem called Golgotha, which is called the place of the skull because that's where they crucified people, before he went to that hill, he had to take a little side trip here and take his disciples up this mountain to give them this vision of what the future held. So, why did they need this vision? It's because they were going to be frustrated. They were going to be afraid. And what was this experience he blessed them with? Well, it says, first of all, he began to shine. The light radiated from him, from his face and from his clothes. What is that about? Well, how do you talk about interior spiritual reality without using words and images and metaphors? That's the only way you can talk about it, right? Unless you have the experience personally, you have to use these images. And this is one of the tried and true images, that when you have an encounter with God, the light shines forth. I kind of like to think about it, this was the inner life that was in his heart that was showing him the path. This was the fire that was burning in his heart that gave him the passion for his mission to follow his God. And at this moment, for a brief time, this interior reality was manifested in this exterior way by this brilliant light. A number of years back, the monks who have there's a group of monks in a monastery in Collegeville, Minnesota, outside of the Twin Cities. And they decided to undertake a big, bold project, one that seemed almost foolish. They decided to commission someone to produce a handwritten Bible. The last time that happened was centuries ago in the Middle Ages, before they had printing presses. The monks had to write out the Bible all, every word by hand, and they would illustrate it with beautiful pictures in there. And they commissioned the guy who was the calligrapher to the Queen of England, the best calligrapher in the world, to do this. He wrote all the queen's royal decrees, and now he was going with a team of people who was going to write this Bible. And I've seen pictures of this Bible, and the paintings that they put in there to illustrate the Bible were amazing. And he had actually used gold leaf, real gold, to illustrate to outline Jesus, because that divine light was a symbol of holiness. And I'd only seen pictures of us. Well, what does gold look like in pictures? It looks yellow, right? So I thought, that's interesting, that's a pretty picture. But a couple months ago, I found out at the monastery south of the University of Mary, the nuns there had been given a special edition of this Bible because they're a sister monastery with the monks in Minnesota. And I had a chance to look at this. And these pictures that I had seen, just as regular pictures, you know, all of a sudden I turned the page, and here was Jesus outlined in gold, and the real gold shone in the light, and it just jumped off the page. It just drew your eyes there. And what had only been a picture before, all of a sudden the reality was there. That was Jesus' transfiguration. Now, Jesus had a couple guys show up and visit with him, Moses and Elijah. What were these guys doing there? What did they represent? What did they mean? You can come at it several ways. Moses was the great lawgiver. He wrote the first five books of Moses, the first five books of the Bible. So there was the law. And Elijah was one of the prophets, and he represented that glorious tradition in the scriptures. And so here, coming together, were the law and the prophets, and they were pointing to Jesus. That's a wonderful way of understanding it. Elijah also was the traditional forebearer of the Messiah. Jews to this day who are looking for the Messiah yet to come believe that Elijah will appear and be the one to announce it. So here was Elijah announcing the Messiah. But I like to look at it this way. Both Moses and Elijah had to face down the most powerful empires of their time. and speak the word of God's truth in the face of power there. Moses had to go to Pharaoh. Egypt was the power, the empire, and little Moses, this slave people, the leader of the slave people, had to go to the most powerful man in the world at that time and say, "Let my people go." And it seemed foolish, but because he trusted in God, God made that happen for him. Elijah the prophet had to denounce the corruption of the very kings and queens of Israel. Guess how they liked that? They hated that. Evil Queen Jezebel wanted Elijah to die. She was trying to get him to die. Elijah was frustrated and discouraged, whined to God, what is going on here? I've got no hope here. And God says, no. Soon the evil queen Jezebel will be gone, and my word given through you is still going to continue. Well, look what Jesus was going to do. He was going to march into Jerusalem, which was the center in that part of the world of Roman power. Rome was the most powerful empire known to man to that point, and Jesus was going to stand in front of his emissary there, Pontius Pilate, and say, "God is in charge." And as foolish as it seemed, even though he's going to be destroyed by the cross, 3 days later, guess what? He was alive. The glories of Rome are just ruins now in Italy, but Christ is still alive. Well, the disciples loved this, right? Who wouldn't love this? As someone said, this is the kind of Jesus we want to see. He's in charge. He's loving us. He's giving us this special insight. He's shining in his glory. We want to stay there. And that's what poor Peter wanted to do. He said, we need to make monuments for you here, like the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Memorial. And we'll just build these wonderful temples for you. And we'll just stay here and we'll just enjoy the good times that we're having forever and ever and ever. This was a bad idea, though. And God literally put the curtain down on that as soon as Peter said it, because he surrounded them with a cloud so they could see nothing. Instead, they had to give up that idea, that foolishness, right away, and listen to the voice of God. And what did the voice of God? He reaffirmed what he said at Jesus' baptism. This is my son, the one whom I love. You need to listen to him. We think that the life of Christianity is just basking in the glory. No, it isn't. It's about listening. Listening to what Jesus said. And Jesus said, before we get to this glory, I need to go through the cross. That's how I'm saving the world. So he led his people off the mountain. He led them down back into the valley. We like to think that, we like to echo the words of Martin Luther King Jr., right? I have been to the mountaintop. But Jesus said, even more important, is that we need to go back to the valley. We need to go down. We need to walk towards Jerusalem. And one final thing at the end of this interesting encounter with his disciples. After it was all over, he said, don't tell anyone. Keep it quiet until you have seen me die and rise again. Why? Because they wouldn't understand the glory without seeing the process of the cross that got us there. We all want to skip the hard lessons of life, the journey through the cross, and jump straight to the resurrection. But if you do, you miss the point. You don't know what the journey is about. I've seen how this works a little bit with my disease. I've received so many ways of being reached by you, and it's been such a blessing in my life. So many cards and emails and texts and phone calls and conversations, all offering support, and every single one of them means the world to me. But there are a few of them that stand out in a special way. It's the people who have reached out to me and said, I have been on this journey. I have walked through what you did. I've gone through the treatment. I know what it's about. And I have come out to the other side. And those people speak in a special way. Jesus is saying that to us until we've seen the whole journey, until we've walked with him. Only then are we going to have good news for everyone else. That's a wonderful story, isn't it? Jesus reaching out in this special blessing for his disciples. And it makes me think, well, so what about me? What about us? Aren't we going to face challenges in our life? Disappointments? Life and death decisions in our life? Aren't we going to have to take up our crosses too? What about us? Where is that special help for us? Where is that special encounter on the mountain with Jesus that gives us the strength to go forward? Well, what do you think we're doing here today? What do you think worship is about? That's exactly it. Jesus invites us here to come with his people and join him in this special time where we will get a vision big enough to see us through whatever life is going to throw at us. That's the reason he wants us here. So that maybe one of the familiar images or the verses from one of your favorite hymns will touch your heart. Maybe one of the prayers will be exactly the words that your heart wants to present to God. Maybe part of the sermon or the readings will give you an inspiration in a special way. Maybe visiting with your friends before or after church will give you some strength and hope and comfort and support in your life. But maybe most of all, it will be this. You are invited today to come forward to the place of transfiguration, the communion rail, where these very simple elements of bread and wine become transfigured into body and blood, and they become the very conduits, the very means by which God can meet you and share in the most intimate and personal way his love and his grace and his strength and his peace and his joy, so that you can leave this altar rail and go about your life. Jesus invites us here every week so that we can hear the most important things that we need to hear, that not only Jesus is his beloved son, but you are his beloved child as well. And with that glimpse of glory in your heart, you can face anything. Amen.